a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
So, fellas, the Roundtable crew is here, and they, I mean, they heard Brian Cook was coming by again, and we got to do something for Brian. So, Cirrus Restaurant Cigar Bar, have this spread for you, B.
This is impressive. There's some scotch duck eggs here. Good stuff.
Yeah, man,
did you know that without anyone telling you?
Well, it's not a duck egg. It's just a regular egg, but it's scotch.
But how did you know that?
Dude, Brian Cook knows his food. Are you kidding me?
I am impressed.
This guy.
It's an egg wrapped in sausage. Like, how do you not know what a scotch duck egg is?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
I keep saying duck egg because Grange has a great scotch duck egg, so that's why.
This is the first time I've ever heard of, seen this dish.
It's a life changer, man.
Okay. I shall give it a shot. You know Brian Cook's voice. You know MGO Blog. You know it well. They do great things over at MGO Blog. They also do great things over at the Power Rank with Ed Fang. Ed, how are you?
I'm great. Looking forward to my own microphone so I don't have to make out with Craig Ross every time I want to say something on the show.
Which, as an aside, I get an email every week, at least one after this show, usually more.
And it's usually me being like, why weren't you better, Craig?
Yeah, some of them are that. Like, one person said, how come I didn't chime in on the Victoria's Secrets conversation? And I said, hey, I'm smarter than that. And the other one was, how come I hate on Ed Fang so much? And I said, no, you're getting me confused with Brian.
I think that's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate.
We all love each other here, man.
It's not me that hates Ed Fang. It's facts and reason.
Everyone who knows this, listens to this show, know we all love it. Got a lot of love for each other.
That is true. That is absolutely true. And they know that we dig so deep that we even break down who's officiating the games.
Oh, man.
Right? Isn't that right, guys?
Oh, man, you had to start with that.
Well, I mean, it's top of mind since we just talked about it. There have been times in this rivalry where the referees have essentially decided the game. No, essentially, they did decide the game. They decided the game in 1990. They decided the game in 1995. They decided the game in 2000. So what are we, who's officiating this game makes a difference.
Who's officiating this game makes a difference. I don't want to get us sued because apparently some radio station in Kentucky is being sued.
So let's talk hypothetical. Hypothetically, if it was John O'Neill's crew, what would that mean?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he has. I have PS. What is it?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
PTSD about this game anyway, right? And then I hear that John O'Neill may officiate this game. It really makes me,
Craig, the P in PTSD is post.
Post, yeah.
So are you changing the P to pre?
Yeah. Right, this is probably pre. We had O'Neill last year in the Iowa game. He was terrible. We had him in the Ohio State game, a Michigan State game the prior year. It was terrible. So I don't know. Maybe he's feeling some sense of guilt, and we'll get it turned around. Assuming this is true.
Is he inept or corrupt? I mean, it seems like the choice is here.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. When it seems to go one way all the time, I lean to corrupt. But that's just my speculation.
Yeah, it's just.
The home team's supposed to get the benefit of the doubt.
Did he give us the benefit of the doubt?
He did not, but there's variance in that too. So
I don't know.
Otherwise, I can't talk about my feelings about the Russ situation on air.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Brian?
I hope it's a good game that's fairly officiated. That's
me too.
That's my take.
That's about as
hot.
We can hope.
Hot take.
We can hope it doesn't come down to the officials. How about that? In an ideal world, it will work out that way. What we don't know with Michigan is how much has their protection improved during the bye week. That had to be a focus for them. In Michigan State's defense, they did what they've done for years with how much they how much they attack. It's a boom or bust approach to defense, especially now that they have less talent out there on defense, but it was good enough to go out there and totally stymie Iowa last week.
Yeah, Michigan State, I thought, was pretty good against Iowa last week. They're a solid defensive team. I actually think they're better on offense than people are giving them credit for. I mean, I think they pass block pretty well. And
I don't think it matters against Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have trouble with our defensive line and our pass rush in general. But they're not an incompetent offensive line by any stretch of the imagination. They're decent.
I mean, they did fail to get 300 yards against Iowa.
True.
And they did rack up a bunch of garbage time yards against Notre Dame.
I think they got exactly 300 yards, actually.
Did they?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, 300.
Well, but I mean, you know, I mean, I think the offensive line for Michigan State has played well. I mean, Lewerke is a pretty decent athlete. He's probably a better passer than I've been giving him credit for. He can take off. So, again, I don't think that matters against Michigan's defense, but, you know, they're probably going to break some plays here and there. One thing I wanted, I mean, I watched the first half of the Iowa game last night, and Iowa took one shot deep against their slot. He was open. Stanley missed him. I don't know why you don't go to that four or five times in a half.
You will.
I don't know.
You absolutely do.
Did they try in the second half? And
no.
But they don't have much. They don't have much athletic. They don't have much speed.
They didn't need to. Vandenberg was wide open on that one in the first half. You know, they're playing a lot of, I think, freshmen, sophomores, corners, safeties, and everything. And you know what Michigan State's going to do? They're not hiding anything. They're playing those safeties with the 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. You know that you can take shots against their safeties. They probably are not going to have the best corner play, although they look surprisingly good in pass defensive numbers, way better than I expected. But
well,
I mean,
they've played Western Michigan, who doesn't have a quarterback.
Understand.
They've played Bowling Green, who doesn't have a quarterback. And then I follow Iowa fans on Twitter, and they're like, "Yep, this is just the same old crap because Michigan State is presenting the same defense that they've always presented against Iowa, and they're running the same stuff they've always run against Iowa, and Iowa has no response."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting that Michigan State's defense looked a lot different against Notre Dame. So against Notre Dame, they couldn't press. And they had two cornerbacks off the line of scrimmage, and they were playing a three deep. So they had one of those safeties who was so far away from the box that he couldn't really participate. And that really changed their ability to swamp the run game, which has always been their trademark. And Michigan absolutely has to get them to respect the passing game enough for them to back off like that.
That's what I said. I said earlier in the week, I think they're going to have to throw to run successfully. I think you run the football. Of course, you want to be successful, but you gotta run some early on to set up play action. You do that and hit some of those shots that Ed was talking about. I think tight ends are going to factor big in this game. They're going to be some voids in the middle of the field. You're going to be able to take advantage of their safeties and coverage. You know, all contingent upon, dependent upon your ability to protect. But I think that paves the way, if you can hit some of those shots, to your point, Brian, paves the way for them to be more successful actually running the football a little later in the game once that pass is established.
I mean, they don't really have much pass rush. Their defensive tackles are excellent, and they're very run-focused in the linebackers. I wouldn't run the ball once in this game. Not once.
Well, I mean, it's hard.
I would go full Pete Carroll against Michigan in the Rose Bowl and just be like, we're not going to run the ball against these guys.
Well, I mean, maybe once, just to set up a little bit of play action, right? I mean, a little bit of respect to get the safeties.
I mean, you can run all the play action you want because they will bite on it every time. But like, I guess you got to run if it's third and one. But other than that.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Happening.
I'm obviously with you on
of
this.
Course
I
you
mean,
are. Of course
I watched.
You know, this is not rooted in reality, right?
No, I'm not running once.
Yeah, I don't say. Yeah, I.
Jim Harbaugh.
I'm with.
Hey,
Brian.
Jim Harbaugh is very flexible, creative, offensive mind.
Yes. He's flexible. He's not a contortionist.
He's also one
he's
that
not, he's not going to go into game.
I'm just telling Jim Harbaugh the right way to approach this game, and if he wants to do it, he can do it.
But
if he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't have to do it.
I mean, this is also reminding me of 2 years ago where I thought they should have taken more deep shots against that secondary, and we didn't see as much as I had hoped for in that game at the Big House.
I mean,
I hope we see more.
You know, isolate.
Like right down the middle of the field.
Donovan Peoples-Jones up against them, one of their safeties, and then go to town.
Yep.
Every play.
Well, you know, the one
every play.
The one place where they are different is they will play their corners soft sometimes this year. They even against Iowa at times and Iowa did take advantage of that. When the corners were soft, they just threw out to the wide receivers and Iowa did gain some yards that way. I think it's going to be, as you point out, more difficult for them to come up and check the check the wide receivers man-to-man, or at least punch him at the line of scrimmage. I think that's going to be hard for them. I don't know. And so I'm with Brian. I think I'm not saying you have to pass on every down, but this has to be a pass-first attack, I would say, against them, because they are good against the run. Those defensive tackles are good. You know, the linebackers are pretty good. I mean, we haven't shown we can really run block all that effectively. It just seems like we should go that direction. So I'm with you.
734-998-1050. Again, 734-998-1050. Phone lines are open. Let's go to the phones. Go down to Sylvania and talk to Don. Don, you're on the Michigan Insider. What's up?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Two part question. So going against Michigan State's defense, do you think our tight ends and especially our slot receiver, Grant Perry, will get behind the soft middle behind the linebackers? Because in the last, actually every game Michigan State's played in, like last week against Iowa, they brought everybody right up. And as soon as the ball snapped, they recklessly ran through, especially Joe Bashe, their linebacker, who, by the way, is very good. How are you going to use that soft middle to stop that? Are we going to use screen plays or draws? Do you think the draw play would be effective? And going on defense with their mobile quarterback, do you think we're going to play home, or do you think Michigan State will use the same offense they did last year when they brought a guard down to go after, you know, Peppers quite a few times and try to go on Devin Bush to bring some size down through the middle and try to block down on our linebackers, open up the middle, so Lurie or the running back can take off? I just think I don't see State changing that much, and they haven't changed either offense or defense. But I think Lurie with his feet is going to pose some threats. But then we got John O'Korn that can run the ball too, so that might pose a threat to them too that they weren't really thinking about this year when Spaeth went down. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks a lot, Don.
Well, the interesting thing about Michigan State is that like on third and short, third and medium, like third and three, third and four, they're going to run speed option a lot. And Michigan needs to be prepared for that. I mean, they need to understand that Michigan State loves to run the quarterback in those situations. They don't do it a ton, but they do it in high leverage situations when that extra blocker you get from running the quarterback is really valuable. So I think that they can do that. That might be an off, like a positive effect of playing Air Force, which is nice.
Right, and they like to run the jet too. And you know, Michigan's seen they've seen that in good doses here early in the season as well. So, yeah. You know, I just feel like he asked. I think the broad view, the more succinct question is, do you expect Michigan to change any defensively starting on that side of the ball? And I think Don Brown is going to go in and unleash the hounds and tell them to be responsible.
Do you think they're going to come out in their odd stack in the 3-3-5 again? I tried to ask this question on Monday, and anyway. You know, of course I wasn't going to get an answer.
Yeah, you weren't going to get an answer to
but
that.
But the... you know what you think they will? They'll stay. With
yeah, I mean,
them. They'll change it up. I think so.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think you'll see it, but I don't think you'll see it exclusively.
Well, Michigan State's been more of a one back offense this year. They don't really have a lot of tight ends. They have the Sokol kid. I don't think they've played really much of anybody else. So that'll be a kind of offense that the stack is prepped for, and also like they've just been so good with it that just run it, and then. If they do give you some problems, then you can bring in Monet and see what he can do with the four-man line. And I'd expect on short yardage that you'd get a lot of Monet, but you know, until someone busts it up, you gotta roll with what works. So Michigan's number one in the country in a lot of defensive stats. You gotta keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, in the Iowa game, I think the leading rusher for Michigan State was Lewerke.
He was, yeah.
And mostly, I think it was.
Well, he's the leading rusher for the season.
Is that right? And
yeah.
And it's a lot of broken plays. I mean,
well, yeah, there's like a 52-yard quarterback sneak, that kind
right.
of business.
Yeah, and he had a couple broken plays against Iowa, and so I don't know if Michigan will spy him. I don't know what they'll do.
I can't imagine they'll do that. Maybe, but I think what they'll is just looking at the way last year when, you know, they play. I mean, I think what game was it? Was it the one of those games early in the season where, you
UCF.
Know.
UCF.
Yeah, where the mobility of the quarterback was problematic for them because their guys were rushing and getting out of their rush lanes, and they're a man-to-man team, and boom, quarterback breaks contain. He's running for a long time. And so we were wondering, what are they going to do moving forward? You know, Lufau can run, and, you know, you're going to face more mobile quarterbacks. Man, stay in your rush lanes. Guys are going to keep coming. They just have to rush responsibly. So that I think that's going to be the charge. I don't. Maybe they'll spy, but if you spy Devin Bush, then you're taking him out. You're taking him out of being that chess piece that he has been for them this season.
I mean, there might be some stuff that kind of looks like a spy because, you know, you'll see Michigan in man coverage, and then whoever's on the running back will convert into a rusher after he sees that guy stay in the block. So you might get a little bit of that spy-seeming action, but it's really just the delayed blitz. So
yeah, the one thing about the Iowa game is Iowa really got no pressure on Lewerke at all. And I think Michigan State's only given up 6 sacks all year.
That's not going to continue.
Yeah, and I don't think so either. I mean, but I think we will get pressure on him. And I think he's going to look like a different thrower, at least, with a little bit of pressure than what standing back there in a completely clean pocket.
He gets scattershot. And, you know, a lot of Michigan State's success against Iowa in the air was the fact that they were going up against Mike Ojemudia's younger brother, who was, like, the number 1,700 recruit in the country and, like, ranked as an outside linebacker and really, really struggled as a cornerback. So... Is Michigan going to present them that soft of a target at one of the corners? No. So that's, you know, I think that, you know, you're going to see Michigan get some opportunities, deflect or up balls, because Lewerke can get kind of wild. He's one of those guys where when he throws it correctly, he looks great. And then, you know, 20-30% of the time, it's just a shotgun wherever it goes. So, I mean, he's a good quarterback, but is he good enough to consistently move the ball against this defense? Doesn't look like it.
So let's flip to the other side of Don's question before we get to the break. And he talked about Michigan handling the pressure that Michigan State is obviously going to bring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the intermediate – I mean, it depends on if they're in that super aggressive quarters defense like they were against Iowa or if it's more like the Notre Dame defense. Because those safeties will fill in that intermediate area, and you have to beat them over the top. So, I mean, deep shots.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the deep shots you got.
They only have 9 sacks on the year, and they play Bowling Green and Western.
Well, they don't get much from defensive ends because one's a walk-on, and then Demetrius Cooper is popping in the lineup, but he had like 2 sacks last year. So it's
well, their sack rate's 7.5%, so it's above average against poor competition.
All right.
And like they'll get some linebackers through, I'm sure, but you just have to keep on taking those deep shots because that's what they're set up to want you to take, and Michigan has the athletes to get down the field.
Yeah, I'd really like to see Donovan Peoples-Jones have a big game, get a lot of targets downfield, just like Brian's saying.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com, MGO Blog Roundtable, Brian Cook from MGO Blog, Ed Fang from the Power Rank, and Craig Ross, who's written
some books.
He's written some books on Michigan football. Yeah. That are, I mean, they're page turners, Craig. Oh. One is called The Obscene Diaries of a Michigan Fan, right?
Wow, yeah.
The other is called the Search for the Unified Field Theory Football Version.
And there's an unauthorized one at Literati right now. you can purchase, and they'll be like, this isn't our book.
I figured I had...
Is it still there, Craig?
What?
Did you put another one?
I did a couple of weeks ago, so I don't know. One of them evaporated right away, but one, I don't know if it's still there. I go in there and buy stuff all the time. They never say anything to me.
Our listeners will keep going in and buying that autographed copy if you keep putting it in there, Craig.
It's dangerous to talk to you. They know that.
734-998-1050. Let's go to the phones, and let's start off first with Don in Ann Arbor. Don, good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. Whether it's good advice or not, I don't expect Jim Harbaugh to follow Brian's suggestion of not running the ball at all, which means that we'll attempt to run the ball a lot into the teeth of that, you know, Michigan State defense selling out to stop that, which means to me that we're probably going to see a lot of 3-and-outs. It's going to be a tight, relatively tight game on the scoreboard. With a lot of 3-and-outs on both sides of the ball, which then means, as with any tight game, kicking game becomes incredibly important. Can you guys talk about Michigan State's kicking game and how it compares to Michigan's?
Yeah, I watched a bit of that. Their kickoff guy, first of all, can't seem to get the ball to the end zone, at least in the games I watched. He struggled with that, and the ball was kicked a little low. Meanwhile, our guy, his name is Fug.
James Fug.
He got I think they consider 4 seconds reasonable hang time. He was getting 4.5 seconds, and he's actually even kicking it intentionally short at times, which is quite remarkable. So on that front, I lean to Michigan. On the field goal front, their kicker might be okay. He missed, I think, a 43-yarder or so this week, and he didn't even get it there, and he was right. I like our field goal kicking better. I think we have more range with Nordin. Punting might lean to them a bit. I think their punter looks pretty good from what I saw in the Iowa game.
This is Robin's first game, though, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he got a lot of fair catches, and I thought he looked good.
He's okay. I mean, I lean slightly to State on punting, but on the other two elements, I lean to Michigan. I got a question for Brian and Ed. So far in Harbaugh's career here at Michigan, he's 23-0 when we rush for more than 100 yards.
Yeah.
And this relates to Don's question. We're 1-6 when we are under 100 yards.
It's because they keep trying to run when they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. I think they'll get 100 yards, okay. But I don't think that means that they're going to be successful running the football off the bat. I think Brian is right.
Yes.
I'm qualifying what I'm about to say.
Oh.
I think he's right in that Michigan will have to throw to run successfully in this game.
Yeah.
I don't think early in the game they're going to be. Michigan State is they. It's an obvious approach to the game. First of all, they're a hard charging, reckless abandon defense anyway. But if you're in this contest, aren't you saying I'm going to make John O'Korn beat us? Aren't you saying that? Aren't you loading up against the run? And if John O'Korn can make some throws with pressure in his face, then tip your cap. I think that's their approach. I think as we've been pointing out on this show, deep shots and setting up those deep shots with, you're going to have to be a little belligerent early, Brian. You're going to have to run it into,
you got to run it into a stack box.
You
got to do that.
you're going to do that to set up play action.
Whatever. You don't need to set up play action with Michigan State. They set it up for you. They're like, this is our defense. And you're like, oh, let's run play action against that.
Well, I think Brian's point that Michigan State didn't have the safeties up as close in the Notre Dame game is interesting, too, because I think you would be very aggressive against Brandon Winbush, too, in that game. So I think you come out and look at what they're doing. I mean, if they're playing that really tight quarters defense that Brian's been telling us about, then absolutely throw it.
Yeah.
I mean, right at their safeties. Right down the middle of the field, whether it's a tight end, whether it's DPJ, Grant Perry, whoever. Take a shot and take it first down on the first drive.
So I think you'll see them run it, but I think you'll see the yards per carry pick up later in the game. That's how I think it'll play out.
Yeah, and so Craig, that's a great stat, and yeah. I'm sure it's true. You have to recognize that a lot of times when you're up 2 touchdowns in the second half, you're going to run 20 times, and that's how you get 100 yards, right, whether you are efficient at running the ball or not. And
it was a question, not an answer, mm-hmm. but it is a reality that when Harbaugh runs for 100 yards, he doesn't lose.
Well, let's put all those 100 yards in the second half. Maybe 3 in the first half. I want him to run at least once, Brian, in the first half. On 2nd and 3 for a first down, okay. And then he can throw every other play, and then we'll get the 100 yards in the second half.
I can hear Jim's like, what are you guys talking about?
No, this is his
Don't
plan.
Don't run the ball.
This is his plan. He's like, yeah, I totally agree with Brian. That's what.
What kind of football conversation
he's like,
is
he's like,
this?
Finally, someone understands
me. Not me. I'm not saying don't run the ball at all. It's not me.
Well, these things happen. The Jacksonville coach said he wasn't going to throw the ball at all this season.
Well, has he?
Afraid of
Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yeah, because he
said he wasn't going to throw the ball.
Yeah, he said he'd like to run the ball every single play.
Oh, he has Leonard Fournette.
Well, and he's got Blake Bortles.
That too. He also has Chad Henne. Put Chad in the game.
I'm just saying, it's not.
And his number one receiver is out for the season, so I wouldn't throw it either.
Well, I'm just trying to defend Brian Cook. Okay. These kinds of crazy conversations happen in football in 2017.
So not crazy.
Yes, it is. 7-3.
If you're defending Brian, how can people send emails to us saying that you guys hate each other?
Yeah, that's true.
We're like two violins in a symphony. I've tried to explain this on Twitter.
Yeah, this is the worst symphony in the world.
You're always out of tune.
734.
Wait, me?
No,
9-9-8-10-50. Let's talk to Dennis in the OC. Dennis, what's up?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Another excellent discussion on these things. So my suggestion is we all drink a lot of hard cider to have solidarity with Sam and the American Revolutionary founders. And then we wore our Michigan hockey jerseys and our Brian Cook masks to help inspire Coach Harbaugh his game plan.
Wait, there's a Brian Cook mask?
I want one.
No, there isn't.
Oh, damn.
Let's make one.
Let's make one.
Yeah. That's a copyright infringement of my face.
They put your face on a shirt, didn't they?
I did. That's I can't. Okay.
And I still don't have one of those shirts.
I'm 100%.
Do you think there's a reason for that? Do you think
Brian there's a Cook reason mask. For that? I'm showing up next week with a Brian
you,
Cook.
I will sue you.
I do have a question.
Sue.
Okay, thanks. Would it be something to consider, maybe a passing spread, and how could we utilize the tight ends in that? Would that be something that we might utilize to beat their defense?
You know, I actually wrote that in the Observer this year, that I thought out of the spring game and bringing Greg Fry back, that maybe we would see some spread to pass, but hasn't come to pass.
They've run a lot of five wide, and they've done it well. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of five wide, because Michigan State is not going to pull one of those linebackers off the field. They're going to run their base every play. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you can get one of those guys in coverage against a Gentry or a McCune, I think that's an advantage for Michigan. So, yeah, I expect to see five wide. I expect to see a lot of quick passes, and I think we're going to move
pass every down.
Pass every down. It's going to be like Joe Taylor, Purdue, RIP Joe Taylor. We're going to pay tribute to Joe.
734-998-1050. No, we aren't. Let's talk to Bill in Ann Arbor. Bill, what's up?
Hello, Sam and group. A comment of last week when Greg said something about the offensive line really needs to have synergy. They need to work together and be strong as a unit. And his comment was jumped upon by the other members of the panel, where I think the argument was they need to know their individual jobs, et cetera, et cetera. But I think Craig, who I absolutely admire, he's one of the greatest minds in the area.
Hey, don't laugh, man.
Hey, sorry. Hey, wait, I paid this guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's your brother's name, Craig?
That's John. It's not Bill. Well, thank you, Bill. You're a great human being.
Well, and you mentioned you have a great human being as a brother who I met when you used to come out and join us and talk football with my Friday group.
Yes, and, I know who this is.
I still believe... I live next door to Ed Moransky, and I saw him before the Ohio State game passing out T-shirts, which said, passed them out to his offensive line brothers, they will do not let them put a hand on John. And there's a real degree of synergy there. And I think Greg's point was stepped on and moved on quickly. Absolutely critical to this game.
I actually don't remember this exchange.
I believe him, though.
But maybe it happened. But, you know, interesting Thanks, line of questioning, though, because for Inside Schembechler Hall this week, JT Rogan and I sat down with Greg Fry, and I put this question to him about how synergy and protection is accomplished. It's not... Because, I mean, we're talking about offense. It's not just an offensive line thing. When you look at Michigan's issues in the Purdue game, it wasn't just the offensive line, clearly. So how do you achieve that synergy with your tailbacks and your tight ends? Is it a thing where the communication isn't great, where guys need to watch film together? How does that work? And so it was JT, and I think this is maybe he's been really increasingly insightful as the deeper we get into these podcasts. So he was a tailback, and he understands their pass protection concepts. And so he said it's less about the running back and the offensive lineman. And he didn't use this example specifically, but obviously Wilton got hurt on the play, and we were talking about communication, you know, on that. He said it's less about guys communicating. It's more about each guy knowing the assignment, because if each guy, if each guy knows his assignment and what I mean by that is what adjustments you make based on what looks, then the guys are going to go where they're supposed to go. It won't be, hey, you take that guy, I take this guy. The assignment drives what you do, and not necessarily, hey, you know, the running back and the offensive lineman communicating. So that's a very loose and short description of what he spends like 5 or 6 minutes talking about in the podcast, but it's some really good stuff. We'll play that tomorrow.
Okay.
I mean, I do think that in the run game, like Michigan, the cohesion thing I think is maybe legitimate there, because you see Michigan is getting slanted against by just about everybody against their zone stuff. And when that happens, like you really want someone on the line to realize that that's happening and kind of pull back and be like, all right, I'm going to get this guy out of the way and then I'm going to go do my job instead of immediately releasing downfield. And I don't know if that's a communication issue or just not being very good at running inside zone issue, but Michigan has been getting killed by that slant, and that's all that Michigan State did against Iowa's run game. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, there is some synergy both – to my way of thinking in both the pass and run game. I mean, just – I mean, playing with the same person next to you over and over when you're zone blocking is meaningful because those two guys have to feel the direction of the defender and get to the second level depending on which way the guy is slanting.
You know, I had a question. If you talk about the run game there, Brian. I don't know if you guys have charted this, but how effective – have they been when they bring Cesar Ruiz?
Not effective.
Not effective at all.
No, he's a freshman. He's playing like it, so he picks up a couple minuses a game because he's not very good yet. That's how it goes with freshmen.
And they probably have him out of position too, really, because he's going to be center next year, yeah. I assume. And they haven't been playing him at center.
Yeah,
of
they're playing him as like a bonus tight end.
Yeah, so he's not really playing where he's gonna play.
Oh yeah, I get that. I just didn't know. Were you seeing him making an impact? A positive impact out there when they put him in the game.
He's making an impact. I wouldn't call it a positive one. I mean,
okay, I didn't know.
This is like six snaps, so like, I mean, it's not really any sample size at all. But he's let a couple guys in the backfield.
Gotcha. All right, 734-998-1050. Ira is not signaling a break, so that means I can go right back to the phones and talk to Odell in Ann Arbor. Odell, what's up?
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Doing great.
I really think this game, guys, is going to come down to Michigan's tight ends. If you guys keep saying, you know, they're going to be bringing their linebackers up, you know, playing them close to line, try to stop this run, I just think the tight end is going to have a field day. You saw a little bit in the Purdue game last year that they're starting going to tight end a little more. And I honestly think our leading receiver of this game will be the tight ends. I just think they're going to be like one-on-one with those safeties back there, man. And I'm not saying they're going to break any big plays, but little dink and dunks around the field, man, I'll take that every time. 5-6 yards a chunk. I'll take it, fellas. What do you think? Go blow.
Another thing that we got into yesterday, and Fry, who generally keeps things pretty close to the vest, so you know a lot of people were wondering, did they change the game plan when O'Korn went in the game? I mean, I didn't know the answer to that. I don't know if the game plan was the game plan, and it was always to hit the tight ends more. And Fry said, "Hey, what happened in the game was more about I'll just use your word, synergy between John and those guys. You know, his feel for those guys in those routes, you know, the chemistry that they had, less about, you know, altering gameplay. At least that's what he conveyed to us in the podcast, which I thought was really, really interesting, that he suggested that, hey, you know, the menu hasn't changed. This is what's being ordered. Is what changed.
Well, those guys are open, so that's, you know, a point in their favor for most of the game. And Michigan did seem to have a couple of plays that they thought would work, those little like flat routes where they think that the corner is going to follow the slant, and he does. So you have those catch and runs for a couple first downs. You have the mesh for the touchdown of Gentry. Those are all very tight end focused route combinations, and I think you're going to see more of that against Michigan State.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, those two guys too are tough once they get the ball in their hands. I mean, Gentry runs well. He's got some speed for it. I mean, he's really not a true tight end. McCune runs pretty well when he has the ball in his hands. I mean,
yeah, he had that catch and run for about 30 yards where he's in man coverage against the linebacker and it's just no contest. Like he's
Gentry can run.
Both of them can run. Yeah, both of them can run. Like as a recruit, McCune had like the second best spark score for a tight end in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he put on a show. When he earned his offer at the Michigan camp, I mean, he put on a real show catching the football. So, I remember talking to the guys freshman year, they were talking about how good he looked as a blocker. I was like, well, man, future's bright. He's already looking good as a blocker because we know that he can catch the football. And so it's clearly starting to come together for the young man. One more call before we get to the break. Glenn in Virginia Beach, you're on the Michigan Insider on the MGo Blog Roundtable. What's up?
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
I was wondering how many I can get to agree with me from the round table that I think this game, a lot of this outcome of this game could hinge on how the officials call pass interference. This Michigan State team, the little bit that I've seen in them kind of reminds me of a Michigan State team, I think 3 or 4 years ago, that played a lot of tight man coverage and had everyone intimidated. until they ran against, I think it was Notre Dame, and they had about four or five pass interference caught going deep because they really didn't have the personnel to run the defense they were trying to run. I think the same could happen with our receivers, even though they're young. I think if we go deep on these inexperienced, questionably skill level corners, that we could possibly either completions or, at the very least, get several good calls if the referees are – I mean, they've been inconsistent this year with the passing affairs. But depending on how they're calling the game, I think could determine the outcome.
I mean, it's possible. The thing I want to look out for is offensive pass interference because Michigan State runs a lot of very blatant pick routes. They're not rub routes. They're pick routes.
Well, you're going to see it. You're going to see that against – I mean, you're going to see man beaters against – against Michigan.
Yeah,
I mean,
but it's like last year, not 2 years ago, they were just flat out blocking guys and they didn't get a call the whole game. So,
you know, it's an interesting point. You know, Michigan State did that even when they didn't have, or even when they did have great personnel. I mean, Darquez Denard and Trey Waynes were, they would maul you. So they do that regardless of the talent that they have out there on the football field. You're right. I mean, we're going to really see, you know, with some of these guys, Grant Perry, you know, is going to be fine. But with some of these young guys, how well they get off the line, how well they get off the jam, that's going to be put to the test in a game like this.
Here's my prediction. The MGo Blog Roundtable has shamed John O'Neill into calling a fair game. And so I'm not worried about it. I've talked myself into that.
We got one more break, right, Ira? Let's get one more break. We'll come back on the other side and close things out. I want to get you guys' take because, you know, basketball practice has started. Just a brief mention, at the very least, of the outstanding recruiting class that John Beilein and company have put together. We will touch on that on the other side here. On the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. Let's go to the phones real quick. Talk to Jake in Ann Arbor. Jake, what's up?
I was just calling to say I wanted to give a press to Beilein for waiting two commitments this week. Just sent in. I want to go out and make my prediction. I'm going 21-17, Michigan winning it in overtime. And I just have one concern. My only concern is just the refs. I just don't want to see any injuries and stuff. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not an overtime game.
We can't win by four in overtime. But yeah, and I'm convinced we're going to get a neutral game. We're going to get a neutral game. I've talked myself into it during the show.
We can hope. All right, so Beilein and Company, they pick up a recruiting class that, wow. That's my response. I think they did an excellent job. They did an excellent job recruiting with attrition in mind. They did it in a fantastic job. And you got to work the numbers in this day and age of college basketball recruiting. And that's not, as I've said many times on this show, that's not a question of ethics.
Right.
It's not a question of ethics to work the numbers.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, we the system forces you into doing. And as long as Michigan isn't going Chris Collins on people, it'll all work out.
What's Chris Collins?
Chris Collins, there's a big thing where he basically kicked some guy off the team and they took his scholarship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a lawsuit.
Johnny Vassar.
Yeah, and there's a lawsuit or was so, a lawsuit. About
as long as you're
that,
not getting sued, that. Like it's going okay. You had some Adrian Nunez thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Nunez and Castleton this week on tape, and I really like Nunez. He reminds me of Tim Hardaway. He has an A-plus jump shot. And he really has no breaks in his form. I see him as being pretty athletic. I don't see why he couldn't be a decent defender eventually. He's not going to be a day one star, but I also think he'll be a good spot. He's a very, very good spot up shooter. And I see him being a real asset.
It's almost like you sat in on the meeting with Beilein and Company, because that's who Nunez. When we talked to him, said they said I remind them of Tim Hardaway.
Well, he does. I mean, if kids, I think today learn basketball too early, and so what happens is they're not strong enough to shoot, so they tend to shoot from their chest, and then they don't really end up with true jump shots. So this kid shoots the ball from over his head, and releases after he jumps. So that means if you do that, and you're 6'5", and this kid's in that 6'5" range, maybe a little taller. It means you can always get that jump shot off and have it be a good shot, and Hardaway could do that. This kid actually shoots jump shots from three, which is particularly rare. Steph Curry is a set shooter from three, And so he can shoot the ball from three as a jump shooter. Very unusual skill.
Steph Curry is a set shooter?
He's a set shooter. Yeah. Watch his form. Do it in slow motion. He's a set shooter. Now, he has the quickest release in the history of the game. He's the best shooter probably in the history of the game. But he doesn't have a true jump shot from three.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like set shots are fine from three. To me, that's what I mean.
Well, they can be. They can be.
All right, quickly on Castleton real quick.
Castleton, he's about 6'10". I think he may get taller. I think someone – I read somewhere his dad is actually taller than he is. So there's a chance that he may get taller. He's an instinctive shot blocker. He's very skinny, which is good, which means he can still get stronger and bigger. He's a good rebounder. He's not afraid to get his nose dirty. I can see him putting 20 or 30 pounds on easily. He's got great feet, runs the court pretty well. He's a good shooter. He's not Mo Wagner from three. He's not that. But he is a good shooter and does have an outside shot. I think he's more athletic than Mo. I mean, I think both these guys have very high ceilings. And I think that's true for the entire class. I talked 2 years ago on this show about Ignaz Brazdeikis.
So. Yeah, great pickups. Real quick, guys, your winners and scores, Michigan State.
29-11, Michigan.
Ed? Okay, Craig?
I'll have 24-16, Michigan.
24-16, okay.
29-17. I'd just like to point out that we have barely talked about John O'Korn, and if you are not a Michigan guy listening to the show, you would kind of expect some talk about the backup quarterback, and I think that says a lot.
He's fine. He's good.
Exactly.
He'll rip it up. No runs.
All right, we got to get out of here. Coming up next is Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Better than